As we have heard several times during the conference, quantum error correction is very important. And this is because the quantum information stored in these nice qubits, they are powerful, but they are very delicate. For large-scale calculations, one has to constantly stabilize them by quantum error correction, such that we prevent the information stored here from collapsing into noise. And on Tuesday, Aleska already gave a very nice introduction in the idea of error correction. Here, let me do it briefly again to set up the stage for this talk. The idea of quantum error correction was actually rooted in classical information science, where the redundancy in information is exploited to reduce the effect of noise. For example, if we want to transmit this image through a noisy channel, before transmitting, we can repeat the image several times, such that later we can use a decoder to reduce the effect of the noise. And actually, repetition is the simplest form of an error-correcting code. And not surprisingly, this error-correcting code is called the repetition code. In this code, each logical bit of information is encoded into three physical bits of information. So logical zero is encoded in three zeros. And for three physical bits, there are eight possible states. So there is room for error. And here, we group all the eight states into two classes by the majority rule. So here, the majority are zero. Here, the majority are one. For example, we want to transmit the logical zero, and possible error can lead us to all the other seven states. And here, we use green error to indicate the states undergo one error, and orange for two errors, red for three errors. As you can see, if we assume the probability of error happening is small, then it is always more probable to stay in the same site. And actually, this is the idea of decoding, which means whenever we see a state, we decode to the center of the on the same side. And our decoding algorithms will be based on graphical models. So, and for all the error correcting codes, there is a nice graphical structure to represent the codes, and which is called the Tanner graph. And here is the Tanner graph of the repetition code. And here, each circle represents a physical bit, and each box represents a parity check. The parity check is satisfied or unsatisfied when the sum of all the incoming qubits is even or odd. Then let's see all the eight states in the previous slide. What's their configuration in the Tanner graph? As we can see, for logical zero and logical one, all the parity checks are satisfied, so we have green, green. And if we have an error at the first bit, then the first check is not satisfied, so we have red, green, and et cetera. And we call the configuration of the parity checks, we call it syndrome. And it is, later we'll use the decoder to infer the error from the syndrome. And for a small code like this, we can actually list the optimal decoding table. So here we have green, green, go to no zero, no errors, and et cetera. So one of the most important error correcting codes in classical information science is the classical low density parity check codes. And the Tanner graph for these codes are both irregular and sparse, which can be seen from the adjacency matrix of these codes. Here, each row represents a check, and each column represents a bit. And when we have an edge in the Tanner graph, there will be a non-zero element. And it turns out the classical LDPC code, together with a so-called bleed propagation decoder, can achieve near optimal performance for classical information processing. And this stimulated people in quantum science to study their quantum generalizations. And several code constructions has been proposed For example, here is the quantum bicycle code, and here is the quantum hypergraph product code. A nice property of this code is that we can achieve constant overhead, which means the number of logical bits grows linearly with the number of physical bits. And constant overhead might be important in near-term quantum devices because quantum error correction usually we need a lot of overhead to do that. And a natural question to ask now is, can we use the good classical bleep propagation decoders to decode the quantum generalizations? But however, unfortunately, it is not yet. So here, let me show an example. The very famous Torrey code is actually a special case of quantum LDPC code. And in the Torrey code, each qubit live on the edges on a square lattice. And we have two kinds of parity checks. So this is actually the tenor graph of the Torrey code. We have the Z checks on the faces of the plaquette, and we also have the X checks on the edges. And we have, so on a square lattice L by L, we have two L squared physical bits, but we only have two logical qubits. So the Torrey code actually has a large overhead. Now let me apply the bleep propagation decoder to decode the Torrey code. Here on the x-axis, we have the physical error rate, which represents the noise level of the device. And on the y-axis, I have the logical error rate, which is the probability of error after error correction. As we can see, at all the physical error rates, the logical error rate always grows when we increase the size of the code, which means we achieve worse performance when we increase the overhead, and this is bad. It has been pointed out that quantum degeneracy is the root of this bad performance, and since then, people have tried many heuristic methods to improve bleep propagation decoder in the quantum setting. And in our work, in this talk, we will try an alternative approach via deep learning. To our knowledge, yeah, exactly. So actually, I use this figure to show that currently, so the classical bleep propagation does not work well for quantum codes, and we want to use machine learning to improve its performance. So this is sort of the baseline of our training. Yeah. So that is actually related to the threshold theorem. So here we want to show that the threshold for the original bleep propagation for the Torrey code approaches to zero. So it does not work well. But you are right. If we have optimal decoder, it should not be like this. Yeah. Thanks for the question. And to our knowledge, the first paper on using machine learning neural networks to decode quantum codes is this nice paper by Giacomo and Roger back in 2017. And in this code, they use a Boltzmann machine to learn the joint distribution of the syndrome and error. So when we do decoding, we fix the syndrome nodes to the observation, and we sample by the Boltzmann machine, and the output is the decoded error. So this nice work, this important work, stimulated many following works. So these are all the works for neuron decoders. And up to now, most works focus on topological codes defined on regular lattices. And there is a very interesting one here. They can even map the decoding problem to like a board game and use reinforcement learning to decode that. But because the topological codes are so famous and important, and they have regular lattice structure, people can already design efficient and near optimal decoders for them based on tensor networks. But on the other hand, decoding quantum LDPC code remains hard because these codes are defined on irregular graphs. So in this work, we try to bridge this gap by studying neuron decoders for quantum LDPC codes. Now let me go to details. So to formulate decoding problem quantitatively, we extend the Tanner graph to be the factor graph. So in this graph, this is again the graph for the repetition code. Each node, each circle, is again a binary variable. And now each box is actually a function. So the box here, P, represents the physical error rate. Whenever there is a 1, it will contribute a factor P error, the physical error rate. And here the box F ensures that the syndrome, observed syndrome, is consistent with the error. For example, S here is forced to be the binary sum of X and Y. And with all these constructions, finally, the probability of error conditioned on the observed syndrome is the product of all the factors. That's the name factor graph. Here, let me show an example. If the syndrome is 1-0, red, green, then there are only two error patterns that have non-zero probability. And the first one, proportional to p squared, second one to p, so this one is more probable and should be the output of the decoder. So now, again, we have listed all the possibilities. And in realistically, this is not possible. So we need other algorithms. And let me point out that this is actually a kind of so-called statistical inference on graphs, which is very important in many research areas, including machine learning, statistical physics, and information theory. And let me show that on general large graphs, this kind of exact inference, so if we want to infer the error exactly, it is actually intractable. So because there is this nice statistical physics perspective, we can understand the conditional probability of errors to be a partition function, like a Boltzmann distribution. And in this mapping, the physical error rate is actually related to the temperature. And to find the most probable error is related to find the ground state of like an easy model with random interactions, which we know as physicists is a hard problem. So we need to use some heuristic methods to do this job. And there is this nice observation. If the ground state of this Hamiltonian is not degenerate, we can do a thermal average at each bit to reproduce the ground state. And this is actually the idea behind belief propagation. So we use an approximate solution to this equation. So here is the belief propagation algorithm. The input to belief propagation is the physical error rate in the form of a log likelihood ratio and the observed syndrome. So with this input, this is a belief propagation. As a black box, it will output the log likelihood ratio of the error conditioned on the observed syndrome. And with this quantity, we can easily get the probability of errors at each bit conditioned on the syndrome. And we can make the decoding decision based on whether this probability is larger than 0.5 or not. So on the right-hand side is the inner workings of belief propagation. So in all these equations, there is a message. So it's a message passing algorithm. So there is a message called mu. It propagates back and forth from the checks and nodes in the Tanner graph. And after many iterations, it will lead to a converged output. So let us not worry about these forms. Let me show the structure of the message passing by some cartoons. So for the first belief propagation equation, we send a message from a node, from a bit, to a check. And this message is a simple sum of all the incoming messages from the physical error rate and from all the other messages from other checks. This is the first BP equation. In the second BP equation, the message is sent backward from a check to a bit, which now becomes the product of all the incoming messages. So this minus one comes from the observed syndrome, and all these orange errors come from all the other messages from the bits to the check. This is the second BP equation. And after enough iterations, all the messages will converge. And in the end, we use the third BP equation to do the output. So at each bit, we have the output, which is again now a simple sum of all the incoming messages. So let me show a successful decoding example. For example, this is the output of BP after one BP equation and then take the output, which is not right yet. Here, I use this red dot to denote the true error. And on the right-hand side is after 10 BP cycles. So we see decoding is successful. And for a failed decoding, it will be look like this. After many cycles, either it does not converge or it converges to a wrong result. So unfortunately, when we apply BP to quantum codes, the second case happens a lot. So now we will turn to deep learning and see what we can do there. So this is called neuron bleed propagation. And the crucial observation is that here, I list all three bleed propagation equations. And here, we introduce new tunable parameters into these equations. Here, we introduce bias B and W. And for the second equation, we also take the log of both sides such that the product becomes a simple sum. And now let's observe the right-hand side. All the equations have the form of a weighted sum and with some bias. And in the middle, we have some interleaved nonlinear functions. And this is actually the standard form of a feed-forward neural network. And it means now we can use original BP equations as a starting point of a customized neural network. And if we fix all the newly introduced variables to be one, we get the original BP. So after training, we will improve from the original BP. And we can visualize this neural network as an unfolded message passing procedure. So the original bleed propagation is like unweighted and in-place message passing. So messages passes back and forth in these graphs. But we can unfold this message passing to let it become like this. So now this is incoming layer, and we have the output layer. So these are two layers of the neural network. And this message, they contribute to each other with a weight, which is trainable. If it is one, then it's the original BP. So it's neuron bleed propagation is a weighted, unfolded message passing. And let me show a simplified but more accurate picture of the connectivity of this neural network. So remember here, each neuron actually represents a message, not the bit or check in the original tenor graph. So we have four messages, four neurons, A, B, C, D. And when we do message passing, we can see that 4 sends a message B to 2, and 2 later sends message G to 5. So there is a connection between B and G, and we can associate this connection with a weight, and so on and so forth. So for realistic tenor graphs, which is very big, this neural network would be very complicated. Yes, because the tenor graph is a sparse graph, this neural network is also very sparse. And this is the overall structure of our neural network. And so we have three bleed propagation equations. The first equation is mapped to this one, like the previous slide, and second equation to this one. And we have many bleed propagation iterations, so it is kind of a recurrent neural network. To train this neural network, we have to use the third BP equation for the output, and then we put that into some loss function to encourage successful decoding in the quantum sense. Before introducing the loss function, let me summarize the similarities and differences between classical and quantum error correction. So in the classical case, the error is a string of classical bits. And in the quantum case, it is a string of Pauli operators. But we can still use a string of bits to indicate the occurrence of Pauli X and Z operators on each bit. So again, we can have a classical bit representation. And in the classical case, each check is one row of the adjacency matrix of the tenor graph. Again, classical bit strings. And the syndrome is the inner product between the error and the check. In the quantum case, the check is so-called stabilizer generators, again, a string of Pauli operators. And we can have a similar bit string representation for these checks. And the syndrome is the commutator between the check operator and the error operator. And there is, again, a very nice inner product form of the corresponding classical bit string representations. A crucial difference between classical codes and quantum codes is that in the classical case, successful decoding means the decoded error is exactly the same as the true error. But in the quantum case, we only require that the decoded error together with the true error to be commute with all the stabilizer generators and with all the logical operators. So here for the Torrey code, we know the logical operators are those non-trivial loops around the torus. But for any general quantum code, we can derive the logical operator from the stabilizer generators. And here is our loss. To encourage successful decoding in the quantum sense, we do this inner product of the total error to all the stabilizer generators and all the logical operators. So here, E total error is the simple sum between the decoder output and the true error. So when all these terms are zero, we know that decoding is successful in the quantum sense. So here, to make everything trainable, because here we have a binary variables, and when we do the linear algebra, we have to do mod 2. So to make everything differentiable and trainable, we introduce this smooth version of mod 2, so everything is differentiable. Now let me show the result. So this is the result I showed before for the Torrey code, where for larger and larger size, the performance is worse and worse at all physical error rates. Let's see what happens after training. First, let's observe that the logical error rate decreases substantially. For example, for L equal 10, this red curve, we have three orders of magnitude of improvement in performance. And more importantly, all these different curves, they start to cross each other, which means the development of decoding threshold. And for the Torrey code, because it's a very special example and it has regular lattice structure, we can actually visualize the learned weights, the spatial distribution of the learned weights. So here we see systematic symmetry breaking. So before training, all the weights are one, so the picture should be uniform. But after training, we see symmetry breaking. Because I've mentioned before that quantum degeneracy is actually the root of the bad performance for Billy propagation decoding, so the systematic symmetry breaking actually helps to improve the performance of the BP decoder. So this is only for Torrey code. Our aim is to decode the general LDPC code, which are defined on irregular and sparse graphs. And here I show two examples. So for the quantum bicycle code and quantum hypergraph product code, we can achieve similar result. It is like for different physical error rates, we have the logical error rate before and after training, and we observe orders of magnitudes of improvement. So currently we are working on the cluster generalization of this BP. So actually the Billy propagation algorithm is closely related to statistical physics. Specifically, BP, like what I just introduced, Billy propagation, is related to the Bate approximation for statistical physics, and where we consider physics of single sites. And there is a very important generalization, which is called Kikuchi cluster variation method, where we consider the physics of clusters. And equivalently, there is a very nice called generalized BP, where messages are passed between clusters. And for this generalized version, of course, we have more accurate inference because it will reduce to that in simple cases. And we can have multiple point correlations between the bits in one cluster. And we can gain more insights into statistical physics. We find out this structure can also be mapped to a neural network and is also trainable. To conclude, in this talk, I've shown that the belief propagation algorithm, which is widely used in many research areas, has a very nice neural network representation. And training this representation for the task of quantum error correction, we can have a substantial improvement of the performance. And on the previous slide, I just showed that belief propagation is also related to statistical physics. So I imagine we can have other cases where we use BP, we train that, but for quantum many-body problems. So before finishing, let me thank all the helpful discussions with my colleagues, friends, both back in Sherbrooke and in Yale, especially on Pavi, maybe somewhere in the audience. And with that, I thank you for your attention.
Very interesting talk. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Questions?
Thanks for an interesting talk. So you mentioned this development of the decoding thresholds. Mm-hmm. Can you comment on what is it? What kind of number do you get numerically? And if you already looked into it, how does it change for this other codes you were mm-hmm. showing? Do you have some intuition?
Okay. Thank you for the question. It's a very important question. Let me show the data again. So here I only mentioned we have indications of the development of threshold, but unfortunately we don't have it yet because as we can see, the curve 10 and 8, they cross here, and 8 and 6, they cross here. So it's like the crossing point is moving to zero, but anyway, this is like a good like starting point. And for the other more challenging cases, we have to first define, so here, I only show the result for a particular code with maybe some number of logical bits and number of physical bits to really show, like, because the quantum LDBC code are defined on irregular graphs, we have to define the family of code. It basically means we have to average the performance for many realizations with the same physical parameters. So that is quite, for now, that is quite expensive to do, but it's definitely something to do in the future.
Thank you for the question.
So I don't know if this question makes sense in the context of these quantum codes. I'm not super familiar. Do these results generalize in any way to forms of noise that aren't Pauli operators, like non-unitary?
You mean when we have like measurement errors?
I'm thinking more along just like, you know, channels.
Other channels, right?
Yeah, like
yes.
The more like typical depolarizing,
yeah.
Phasing, et cetera.
Yes, again, thanks for the question. Let me show this. Yeah, so I think the important thing is here so in this talk, I assumed all the different bits, they have independent probabilities for errors. And when you have a non-trivial channel, actually this part of the graph will change. And so this part, which is a physical error rate, it will change. For example, if you have correlated errors, there might be a link here. And we can apply the same algorithm because it's still a factor graph. I think it can be done. And again, so here, every bit is like a binary variable, but in the quantum case, we have four possibilities, like Pauli, XYZ, or identity. And in that case, there is also a very nice formalism of BP in the so-called GF4 field. And in that field, we can also do BP, taking into account all the correlation between X and Z, like errors.
I mean, I didn't mean two-qubit errors or multi-qubit errors necessarily. I just meant single-qubit errors that like aren't bit flips aren't phase flips.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I didn't understand the way you explained that.
So you mean how to take into account the phase flip errors?
No, I just mean like if the error is a different type than a bit flip or a phase flip, if it's...
Yes, like, as I said, for the more general case, we can combine the X part of the error and the Z part error together to be a like four element vector and decode on that. In that case, each node will be like, can have a four possible values, not two anymore. And then we can have a depolarizing channel and like that.
So what you said is equivalent to like a channel's representation.
Channels, what? Sorry.
Like that is equivalent to a representation of the noise as a channel by superimposing polyairs?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, because this is the nice thing about a quantum LDPC code is that they can achieve constant overhead. So as I showed before, for the Atari code, we have to use 2L² physical qubits to encode the 2 logical qubits. But for quantum LDPC code in general, you can have this. So for the Atari code, like the rate, the efficiency of of encoding is 1/L². But for quantum LDPC code, it can be constant, which means you increase the size of the code, but keeping this ratio constant, and you can arbitrarily decrease the logical error rate. So that is one nice thing about LDPC code. Thank you very much.